This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Tan Chung Han and Brian Fernandes, with the top business stories of the day. We begin with some news from the World Bank. It's forecasted economic growth for the country at a moderate level. It says GDP will be 5.2% in this year, 2018, compared to last year's estimate of 5.8%. It's down a tad. Mm.
So, Sharad, on 2017's official full-year GDP data will only be revealed on February 15th, on the eve of Chinese New Year. So, we've obviously seen better than expected numbers in 2017. The government's 2018 GDP target range is between 5 and 5.5%. So the World Bank's forecast falls within the government's projections.
Yeah, so 5.2% from the World Bank. So they are not alone in seeing this moderation in growth, okay? In today's article in The Edge Financial Daily, they quote Nomura and also RHB, both likewise expecting Malaysia's growth to moderate this year. Now, going back to the World Bank, now taking a more medium-term outlook, when it comes to the majority of commodity exporters like Malaysia, our growth is expected to remain strong at around 5% on average from now until 2020.
Yeah, well, why the slower growth this year? Actually, that's a very simple reason for that. Local economists have pointed out to the high base effect mm-hmm. from last year. Also, the World Bank expects a gradual structural slowdown in China. So China's GDP is expected to decline some 60 basis points from last year, down to about 6.2% next year and the year after. So that slowdown will offset the growth in the rest of the region.
I wonder if the year the dog is going to have any effect on the economy. Have we consulted any feng shui masters yet?
I thought we have one upstairs, I think.
In this building, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we should go visit him. Yeah. I don't know. What is the year of the dog's signal?
I'm born in the year of the dog.
I know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Give us your prognosis.
You along with Michael Jackson, Mariah Carey, Jennifer Lopez, Madonna, Ellen DeGeneres.
And Brian Ward. That's being very generous to Brian there. Like, just mention him in the same breath as all of them.
One dead genius and... okay. So much for that. Okay. Moving right along. Okay, so we have these growth projections. The question is, you know, what things could knock it off that track? What kind of headwinds can we expect?
Okay, there's a couple of risks on the downside. One is, of course, elevated domestic debt in China, then large external financing needs, and also third, limited policy buffers as well.
Yeah, now on the upside, there is stronger than expected growth in the largest advanced economies. I think of the US there, you know, given that fiscal stimulus, you know, hey, Walmart just announced that they're going to bump up their minimum pay for their employees, set to benefit some 1 million U.S. workers there. So that could stimulate the U.S. economy. Also, you're seeing resilient growth in emerging markets, also developing economies. So that should continue in the near term and perhaps, hopefully for us, enough to offset those downside risks. But according to the World Bank, the balance of risks are tilted to the downside.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that conversation of what the tax reform is going to do. The Tax Policy Center, I suppose they're only going to be small economic gains. I mean, these headlines are big, but there will be a boost in GDP, but only by about 0.6%.
Yeah, but 0.6% of the U.S.,
it's
that's
a
huge.
Big number.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the question is, how's it going to benefit workers there? Unions and other advocates are saying this bump in the minimum wage by Walmart not sufficient to address decades of wage suppression.
Come on.
They're asking for $15 an hour.
Yeah, look, it's never enough for the unions now, is it? Now,
profits, never enough for the capitalists, sure. Right?
When I worked in the States, it was $5.15 an hour, buddy. Now it's being bumped up to $11. I'll take that any day.
We're going to send you back over the Rio Grande if you continue like that.
But the thing is, I think let's not attribute just this pay rise for minimum wage at Walmart to the tax cuts, because Walmart has been facing a lot of pressure for a considerable period of time, really, to increase minimum wage. So this may be just coincidental rather than tax-driven.
Well, they're not making it sound coincidental. I mean, but then they're the same pocket as Donald Trump's pocket.
So why do we care? So again, those tax cuts that are set to take, that are in effect in the U.S. this year, hopefully that is enough to prop up global growth and, you know, domestic consumption in the States, and they will buy more Malaysian exports then.
Okay. Now, we also saw the ringgit closing below 3.99 yesterday against the U.S. dollar. This makes us Asia's second best performing currency against the greenback. The best performer so far this year in the region is the Thai baht.
Yeah, that's right. So looking at the ringgit right now, how about this? We are still making gains today. Right now, trading below 3.98 against the US dollar. We are weaker against the euro, though. Right now, almost 4.8 against the euro. This is because of some signals coming out of the European Central Bank. Good old Mario Draghi there, perhaps not as dovish as he is stereotyped to be, at least of late. Looking at the Aussie dollar right now at 3.14. And for the Singapore dollar, we are moving further downwards away from the 3 mark. So we are now below 3 to the Singapore dollar.
Woohoo. Okay. I do want to mention that. I mean, I'm very surprised about the Thai baht, because you have this rather incongruous situation of a country run by a military junta, and yet it's such a strong economy. And maybe it's the resilience of the private sector against, you know, I mean, there's stability, obviously, in the political realm, but really not a dynamic government there. But still, doing very well.
Again, keeping in mind, it's still very early in 2018, what, only 11, 12 days in. So we'll see how the rest of the year pans out for not just the Thai baht, but also for the ringgit.
Yeah, so also talking about the ringgit's performance, and let's look at the release of November's Industrial Production Index yesterday. So the Industrial Production Index basically measures output from Malaysia's factories, mines and power plants. So November's IPI came in at 5% year-on-year. So that's way above expectations, and that was the fastest growth that we saw actually in 2017.
Yeah, so essentially the IPI, the Industrial Production Index, is a measure of how much output is coming out from Malaysia's mines, Malaysia's factories, and also Malaysia's power plants, all right? So of the three, you've got the manufacturing sector that really boosted up those November figures. So the manufacturing sector alone saw a 6.7% on-year growth. Yeah. So in short, Malaysia still churning out stuff.
Yeah, and that's also because external forces are in our favor. We've got global synchronized growth at the moment. So that's one of the key reasons why our export sector is actually doing so well.
And that, according to the second finance minister, is also feeding into the ringgit's performance, given how our exports have been, you know, pretty darn good for 2017.
Okay, so you guys have laid out the GDP issue, the IPI issue. Now, what about the enterprise level issues that...
Yeah, so RAM did a business confidence survey recently. They surveyed over 3,000 companies in Malaysia. And so it looks like when it comes to the first half of 2018, they are in investment mode. Okay, so this could translate into good news for Malaysians, because one of the most positive aspects from the survey, so they surveyed them on 7 aspects. One of them that saw the most positive results was hiring. So they are in hiring mode. Which sectors in particular? They're looking at agriculture, mining and manufacturing.
Yeah, but that's on the large company side. But on the SME side, they seem to be less optimistic compared to their larger corporates. So according to RAM surveys, SMEs face issues with punctual revenue collection and also visibility on future contract awards. So there's some, clouds there on the SME side.
Well, to be clear, they are positive, but they're just less positive compared to the bigger boys.
Yeah. Okay. Now, while the Malaysian economy is expanding, CIMB is shrinking its stake in CIMB Principal Asset Management.
Yeah, so here are the details of the deal. CIMB is looking to divest 20% of its stake in CIMB Principal. There's also a separate 10% of its stake in CIMB Principal Islamic Asset Management that will be divested. And the end result would be that CIMB will own 40% of both the Islamic and the conventional asset management unit. Now, that deal is supposed to be wrapped up by June.
Yeah, so what does this mean for CIMB? A couple of things. One, they stand to gain about 950 million ringgit. That's one. Secondly, they're expected to boost their common equity tier 1 ratio by 18 basis points. Now, I found this to be interesting because it's included in the Bursa announcement. Because here we are in 2018, you have this new accounting standard that came into play, the IFRS 9. Okay, and one of the, according to analysts, one of the effects from IFRS 9, I think that's what it's called. Yeah, is that banks will then have to watch their capital adequacy, right? So this CET1, that common equity tier 1 ratio, right? So that's something to be watched out for. Then you got this news that, hey, because of this deal, it will feed into CIMB's capital resilience, at least when it comes to CET1.
Yeah, so let's look at the relationship between CIMB and Principal. They've been partners since 2004. Besides in Malaysia, they've got operations in Singapore, Indonesia and Thailand. And they're one of the largest asset managers in the ASEAN region with over 70 billion in assets.
Yeah, and so according to Patrick Chang, who is the Chief Investment Officer at CPAM, that figure, that 70 billion, that could reach 80 billion by 2021.
That's ringgit, right?
Yeah, ringgit. And we spoke to Patrick on the our old S&M show back in April 2017. Now, granted, his outlook on China there, I mean, a lot has happened in China since April 2017. But still, it's worth a check out, you know, because we spoke to him right after CIMB Principal got its RQFI license. That's the Renminbi Qualified Foreign Institutional Investor Scheme. Yeah.
In fact, last month, CIMB wrapped up its divestment of its 18.21% in the Bank of Yingku in China for 972 million.
Right.
Now, if you go back a little bit further as well, in Q1 of 2016, it divested its stake in CIMB Sun Life Insurance.
Yeah, which is the one in Indonesia there. You know? But at the same time, you know, they are moving capital while they're trying to ramp up its Philippines operations there. So plenty of movements in the region for CIMB. Now, so this is all on CIMB side, right? If you look at Principal side, Principal is that, you know, massive U.S. insurance guys, that the financial management guys. Based on corporate moves in recent times, it looks like they want a bigger say in its Asian presence, because just last week, you had Principal who purchased all of their JV with Indian lender Punjab National Bank, PNB, not our PNB. So PNB had this minority stake. Principal said, no, I'm going to go in, I'm going to grab all of it, right? So yeah, it looks like Principal is pretty bullish on their prospects in Asia, or at least they want a larger say on how they're going to allocate assets. Here.
But Han, it's not just Principal that's taking a deeper look at Asia again. HSBC has made a slew of hires from Goldman Sachs, and so has JP Morgan as well, as they revamp their equities business in the Asia Pacific region. This is also it's really rebuilding its global equities operation since appointing Hong Kong-based Hosni Zaimi to run the business last year. So this whole thing is really about its China joint venture based in Guangdong's financial free trade zone, Qianhai. Hope I pronounced that correctly.
I was being impressed. I would just have just skipped that.
And it was approved in June.
Well, 5 points for effort then.
Okay.
500 points you get.
How many points for effect? Now, yesterday, South Korea's Hyundai Motor Company said it's invested in Southeast Asia's ride-hailing firm Grab. I'd say Malaysia's ride-hailing firm.
Yeah, but it's basically.
They said
now.
That it was part of their strategy to expand into the region to reduce its reliance on China. We'll move on to a bit of automotive news. Yesterday, South Korea's Hyundai Motor Company said it had invested in Southeast Asia's ride-hailing firm Grab. They said that this is part of their strategy to expand into the region and reduce its reliance on China, following, of course, a damaging diplomatic row between Seoul and Beijing that's affected the brand, Hyundai brand in China.
Yeah, so basically this is Hyundai's first direct investment in a ride-hailing firm. It gives them a foothold in the world's third largest ride-hailing market after China and the United States. Grab operates in eight Southeast Asian countries, and it should help increase their exposure throughout the region.
And I think Hyundai is going to work with Grab in supplying them the Ioniq electric vehicle. And also, hopefully, that should boost some sales for Hyundai there. I mean, keep in mind, here in Malaysia, though, they are ranked 16th when it comes to market share. So they've got really small market share here. But looking at this kind of, you know, say, partnerships, right, between automakers and the ride-hailing space, it's not entirely unique, right? Because even here in Malaysia, you have Produa, who did the same thing with Grab. They are also supplying, I think, the Bezas for Grab as well.
And Proton is doing that with Uber.
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're coming up to the news and then we'll be back with the opening numbers of the stock market. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.